Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo. Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español, marca Nacho Monreal. Pim pam pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, a technically bereft goodly morning to you.
Yeah, goodly morning to you. I mean, is it a goodly morning, though? It's not been a goodly morning so far. We've been beset with technical issues, but we're here. We're going again.
We're
starting strong.
We're starting. We'd recorded about 9 minutes, and having done 220 episodes of this podcast, see, it's affecting even the way I speak. But having done 220 episodes, I can safely say, and I don't think you would contradict me here in any way, that they were probably the worst 9 minutes of audio we have ever produced.
They were probably up there. I mean, what's great is that 9 minutes is going to kind of go down in infamy now, and I think almost we should probably make it available at some point, you know, in the future when we do the 1,000th episode. We'll release that 9 minutes as a special podcast just to show everyone how truly terrible at this we can.
Yeah, exactly. Even with all the experience, it was just woeful. Really, really bad. I mean, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain as a caterpillar, where was that coming from?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like we're sort of hinting at that. And if I was a listener at this point, I'd probably want to know. I'd feel like, oh, that sounds interesting. I wonder what the bit about Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain being a caterpillar is. Don't worry about it. Honestly, get on with your lives. We've moved on. You need to move on. Let it go. It sounds appealing, but in reality, it was just nonsense.
Yeah, it really was. Absolute, abject nonsense, which we should never speak of again, which is a shame, really, as well, because there's not an awful lot going on. We were talking a little bit about how there's nothing happening during this particular interlull. I told the most boring story of all time. And you, in fairness to you, you did well to sound vaguely interested in it. So I thank you for that, and I appreciate your friendship in that regard. But we're going to have to pull something together. I suppose the one thing we did talk about that we could still talk about was some of the Arsenal players on international duty. One of whom we discussed was David Ospina, playing for Colombia, had a bit of a nightmare presenting Olivier Giroud with a goal, basically, with some pretty terrible goalkeeping. And I was watching it, and as I said in the blog, I was thinking to myself, Ospina, Jesus, look, he's done it again. That's hilarious. And then I realized that he has actually got to play in important games for us this season, and I didn't feel quite so, amused by the whole thing.
Amused or, I don't know. The fear crept into you. The fear that our season effectively is riding on David Ospina's goalkeeping performances, that, you know, our chances of success are in his slippery gloves. It is a scary thought.
It is, but we came to a kind of logical conclusion, perhaps in the midst of that terrible 9 minutes. So there was one little gem of, I won't say wisdom, but something that wasn't terrible, you know, which doesn't
usable
take much.
Content is what you mean. Yeah.
Usable content. So the idea that Petr Cech is the number one goalkeeper at the club. He plays in the Premier League because at the start of the season, the Premier League is deemed the most important competition for the club, right? So you play your best goalkeeper in the Premier League. Now, the Premier League is not the most important competition for us. It has, the balance has shifted. Cup competition, namely the Europa League, is the most important. So is there a case to be made for perhaps switching, doing the old switcheroo, I guess, where you play Petr Cech in the Europa League and you play David Ospina in the Premier League? Or, you know, maybe just not play David Ospina at all.
just play like rush goalie.
Yeah. No, well, I did mean play Petr Cech rather than just rush goalie, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, I think there is definitely an argument for that. What we were discussing, I said basically, if by the time the Carabao Cup final rolled around, arguably that was our priority, and it's been got the nod in that game. It feels like Arsene Wenger made his decision at the start of the season and is not going to waver from that. But I do think the goalposts have moved, as it were, and I personally would love to see Cech in the Europa League games. Ospina can play as much Premier League football as he wants between now and the end of the season, because it doesn't matter a damn. It is, I suppose, something that every time I think about the Europa League and I dare to get optimistic and I put Boateng in Lyon, David Ospina is one of the things that kind of tugs at me and pulls me back to the reality of how tricky it might be to actually get there.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's a hugely important thing for us for the rest of this season. And I think, you know, I understand to an extent the way that the manager has managed his goalkeepers. You know, giving them both games. He feels like nowadays, in order to have two good goalkeepers, you have to give them games. Personally, I would prefer just to have a number one goalkeeper and a number two who will step in as and when. You know, you look at the Invincible season, for example, and our backup keeper for most of that season was Graeme Stack. There was no question of having two so-called world-class goalkeepers. I'm not sure we do have two world-class goalkeepers, despite what Arsene Wenger says about it. But if you're serious about winning something, if you're serious about winning the Europa League, I think you've got to play your best team. And I think our best team and our best chance of winning it will probably come with Petr Cech. Of course, imagine if I say this now and Arsene Wenger does that and Petr Cech makes a mistake in the final.
Yeah, the internet trolls will come for you if that happens. they both could make mistakes. I mean, you know, Cech's made some big mistakes this season, as well as making some very important saves. You know, neither is perfect necessarily. It's kind of the lesser of two evils to an extent. But I think personally, I really do regard Cech as the lesser and the superior goalie. So I would like to see that happen, but I don't think it's realistic. I just don't see Arsene Wenger changing his mind about it at this point. Do you think there's any chance of that?
No, I don't think so. I think he's made his decision and he will stick with it. He's given his word to Ospina that he'd play the cup games and, you know, his word is his bond and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, personally, I would find his word or his promise to be malleable, you know, in terms of success for the club. I think I could put that to one side. I think I could live with Arsene Wenger disappointing David Ospina if Petr Cech helped us to win the Europa League, right? And Cech has been there and done that in a European competition. He's gone the distance. And I think in a competition like this, where the opposition starts to get a bit more difficult, where the challenge becomes even greater, I just think having the experience of someone like Cech would be beneficial to the team. So that would be my thinking on that. But like you, I don't see Arsene Wenger changing his mind.
No. I mean, he can be quite intractable when he makes his decisions about something. Did you see his interview with beIN Sports, his customary Interlull interview that he gave?
Yes, I did. It was quite interesting, wasn't it? Where he was asked about, you know, the Europa League as a happy ending, and he was having none of that. He was saying basically, no, this is not about how people perceive me or what my reputation is. He doesn't think like that. He doesn't think about going out on a high. He just thinks about doing his best and doing his job to the best of his ability. And, you know, I can sort of see the logic in that, but you'd like to think there'd be somebody who would go, listen, you know, this would be an amazing thing for you. But, you know, I guess he's not interested in that. He's not interested in that kind of a send-off. Whether that's to do with him being so focused on his job or whether he's so focused on continuing, he doesn't want to countenance the idea of leaving. I mean, what do you think it is?
I don't know. It's interesting, isn't it? Because on the face of it, it looks like humility, you know, to say, I don't want that glorious send-off. I don't worry about the PR element of it. You know, I just want to do my job. I don't think about needing to finish it in a certain way. But that's on the one side, it looks a bit like humility. But on the other side, there's a, a kind of arrogance and a vanity to it as well, because he, you know, he also kind of, why is that? Why? What's arrogant and vain about it? I suppose that his estimation of his own ability is so absolutely enormous, and he doesn't necessarily see any reason that he should be considering or contemplating quitting anytime soon. I found it interesting, and it made me think that if things are going to end at the end of this season, it might not be something that everyone agrees with. You know, it might be a bit more of a tempestuous discussion in that boardroom than I had potentially envisaged.
Well, I mean, I think the thing is, winning the Europa League and Arsene Wenger deciding that it's time for him to go is the dream scenario for me. Absolutely the dream. I also think winning the Europa League would put him in a position where there's nobody on that board who's going to turn around and say, well, thanks, but for your own sake, we're going to make a decision for you. We're going to fire you after winning a European trophy and getting us back into the Champions League. You can't realistically see that happen, can you? Stan Kroenke's not going to say, well, I'm going to fire a coach who's just won a trophy and got the team back into the Champions League and is going to earn all that lovely Champions League money for me again.
Yeah, that is the thing, isn't it? You know, you kind of hope might be the wrong word to use, but it would be a nice idea that Arsene could win a trophy and bow out. But equally, you can see him taking that as ammunition for kind of arguing to stay. You know, if you go into that end of season review and say, well, what were the targets for the season? Because I've won silverware and got us back into the Champions League. You know, it's quite a strong case to make. And I have a doubts about the board's capacity to be decisive and firm in the face of that.
Yeah, I just don't see any way that it would change unless he decides himself or somebody says to him, look, take this chance, take this opportunity to go out on an absolute high. And it would be a great way to go out. There's no question about that. Unless someone can convince him of that, then maybe it won't happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been very confident for some time that we were witnessing Arsene Wenger's last season at Arsenal. But funnily enough, as the path to the Europa League final kind of opens up before us, my certainty about that diminishes a little bit, because I do wonder if he gets there and he wins it. You know, he's not got that quitting mentality, has he? He hasn't got, as he says in his interview, he just doesn't have that desire to go out on top. He wants to keep going, keep challenging himself, keep pushing himself. And I think he's eschewed so many opportunities to go out on a glorious day in the past that I think he would probably do it again. And it's about how strong the board are prepared to be. And, you know,
yeah,
not very is my guess.
Yeah, I mean, but I you know, personally, I can see the case for last season, you know, with Chelsea. But the stepping back from it objectively, realistically, as a club, it wasn't maybe the right time to make the change, right? Whereas this time, with all these new people in place with this new backroom structure, et cetera, it would be an absolutely, I think it'd be a crazy decision for him to carry on, you know, considering everything else, like the Cup trophy, the Europa League trophy. It would be brilliant to win a trophy, to win a European trophy again. But I think for him personally to continue, you know, the reality of our season isn't just what we're doing in the Europa League. It is the Premier League. We're 33 points behind the leaders. We're in a group. We're not in the top six anymore. That's the reality of our Premier League season. We're in a different group now. We're in a group with Burnley and Everton and Watford, that kind of a group. That's where we are. We're not part of the big six this season.
I mean, the FA Cups of the previous few years have been talked about as a kind of sticking plaster over our problems. If we won the Europa League, I don't know, it wouldn't be a sticking plaster, would it? It'd be like a kind of robot body that we've been given instead. It would be such a vast exaggeration of our capacity as a team. It would really put a sheen that was undue on this campaign.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, look, it is the conundrum, I guess. You can't not want your team to be successful, I think. You know, that's what it comes down to for me. I just want my team to be successful and to win things and to achieve and to bring silverware. And, you know, it's up to the people who are running the club to run the club as well as they can. And they have a responsibility in this too, I think. You know, that the club have got some responsibility in terms of what the future holds. They're the ones that should be making the decisions, right? Not Arsene Wenger. So, but it's how strong those voices are at the board level, and I don't think they're strong enough.
No. Well, we shall see. Maybe some of these new voices on the board might be a little stronger than the ones that we have grown accustomed to. What did you make of all the stories over the weekend, speaking of Arsene Wenger's possible departure, about Thomas... I don't actually know how to pronounce this, like most names on this show, but I'm going to go with Tuchel?
Thomas Tuchel?
Tuchel. Okay, let's go with that.
I could be completely wrong. That was Tuchel. I don't know. Yeah, someone will tell us anyway. What did I make of all the stories? Kind of interesting. It's been interesting how much stuff has come out from Germany over the last little while. Isn't it? You know, that there seems to be this growing source of Arsenal information from Germany, whether it's to do with Sven Mislintat, whether it's to do with, you know, Mesut Ozil and Per Mertesacker being at the club, whether it's to do with Jens Lehmann. I don't quite know, but there seems to be more information than ever emerging from Germany. And it's been quite accurate, really, hasn't it? You know, a lot of the stuff when Aubameyang was being linked, it came first and foremost from the German press, and the British press jumped on board. So I don't quite know. I mean, it strikes me that he would be one of the people they would be looking at in terms of a replacement for Wenger. And in terms of the profile of the manager, it strikes me as the kind of one that Ivan Gazidis might like to make in order to shift the power dynamic back to executive level, right? Board and executives at Arsenal still remain secondary to Arsene Wenger in terms of the, you know, the power at the club at this moment in time over all things football. So bringing in someone like Tuchel would be a way of reversing that to an extent. They've got a young-ish manager who hasn't really done a huge amount in the game in terms of what he's won, but potentially a very good coach. I know that Lewis Ambrose, who writes the tactics column for Arsblog and is a keen student of the German game, rates him very highly. So I'll take his opinion on that myself. But it seems to be a nothing story based on what Raphael Honigstein tweeted last night. Did you see that as well?
Yeah, I did actually. And I spoke briefly to Raphael. He insists that there is nothing in it, really, and that people at Arsenal don't know anything about these links. So that would appear to be that for now. But, you know, I think that we're going to see more of this, aren't we, in the coming weeks? Like, inevitably, managers are, while there is still somebody in charge, you know, it's inevitable. And I think it's something that Arsenal presumably have to push on with. You have to think that they would be making at least informal contact with any potential candidates, because otherwise they're going to leave themselves in a nightmare position if Arsene Wenger does surprisingly resign, or they choose to let him go and they haven't got anything lined up.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about winning the Europa League as the dream scenario, but clearly there's an alternative scenario, isn't there, where we get knocked out of the Europa League, and then the sort of glue that's holding everything together at this moment in time starts to come apart, right? So what's left of our season is entirely based around what we do in Europe and how we play in Europe and how we perform in Europe. You know, you spoke about the Premier League being irrelevant at this stage. And I think, you know, from the point of view of where we're going to finish or what we can do in the Premier League, that's very much the case. It would just be interesting to see how performances would be after a European elimination, when this is a group of players that has now essentially nothing to play for. That would be a real worry. Well, and the reaction maybe or a number of defeats between now and May in the Premier League is only going to make things worse. Seats are only going to get emptier. And that would be the thing that could prompt the board into action in that regard.
That's it. I think it's irrelevant in terms of our final league position, probably. But I don't think the Premier League's irrelevant in terms of how it could influence the mood at the club between now and the end of the season, particularly if, as you say, we go out of Europe. I mean, the structural thing, it did intrigue me when it initially broke, and I was kind of a little bit disheartened to see the story kind of written off so quickly, because he really did get the best out of Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang. I mean, they had fantastic time under him. He kind of converted Aubameyang into that definitive poacher, you know, bit of guy who'd been playing on the flanks a bit. And Mkhitaryan had that remarkable season that earned him the move to Manchester United amid interest from Arsenal. So it would have been interesting to see them reunited with a coach they clearly have a great rapport with and who has a great understanding of how to use them. But it seems... it seems nothing in it. And there was also the whole Mislintat beef, wasn't there, as well, that a lot of people brought up as a reason.
But that was interesting, wasn't it? The Kicker were saying, yeah, Mislintat has assured Arsenal that, you know, there'd be no problem with Tuchel if he came in. So, I don't know. There's some information coming there from somewhere, isn't there? There's somebody feeding Kicker that information, and they seem to suggest that the source of it was within Arsenal, was... from London. It wasn't necessarily, it wasn't contact with Tuchel himself. It was from there. So it'd be interesting to know where that's coming from or what kind of games are being played, because I think we underestimate perhaps how political football clubs can be. You know, we saw that with Mislintat and Gazidis being pictured in Dortmund before the Aubameyang thing. You know, we drew the message that was being sent there. We saw what was being sent there by Ivan Gazidis to show that, you know, he's involved. He's not just some lackey who's wheeled out to give what's the word I'm looking for here. Polished speeches, which get people on side for a little while until they realize that basically he's spoken a lot but said very little. It was him showing that he is part of what goes on at the football club. So there are agendas at play, I'm sure, and there's boardroom wranglings, and it happens at all kinds of clubs where people are jostling for their little bit of power because they're beginning to sense that something is changing and they're trying to position themselves in certain ways. So I think we'll see a bit more, and certainly if we go out of the Europa League, then I expect all kinds of stories about who's going to be the next manager.
Yeah, and I guess stories like this as well, you have to remember, benefit the potential candidate as well. I mean, Tuchel's being talked about in association with other jobs, Chelsea potentially, Paris Saint-Germain, and it does no harm to his profile, so he's not going to, you know, move to stop it coming out. So, yeah, I don't think this is the last manager we'll see linked with the position between now and the end of the season, kind of irrespective of what's happening on the pitch.
Yeah, one of the people who went away on international duty with a bit of a fanfare was Jack Wilshere. He was talking about you know, how great it was to be back in the England squad. He wanted to get there and obviously play in the World Cup this summer. That's an ambition and a target for him. You can understand that, of course. But he was ruled out of both games with a knee injury, described as minor, but when it comes to Jack, you just can't be sure if it's minor or not.
No, I mean, you know, Jack Wilshere, you know, being out with a minor injury can very quickly become a major one. I mean, it does seem like a relatively small problem. He was expected to be available on Tuesday to face Italy, but then he's not available to face Tuesday on Italy. So, you know, we're into that slightly frightening Wilshere territory. And I think it casts an interesting light on the contract negotiations with Jack. You know, this is precisely the sort of problem that might make Arsenal a little reticent to give him what he's asking for.
Yeah, I mean, what did you make of the revelation, I guess you would say, that Arsene Wenger told him last summer, if a club comes in for you, you can leave?
I was unsurprised by it, really. I mean, I think, was that the summer before last, as in summer he went to Bournemouth, or do you mean this summer just gone?
It was this summer just gone, wasn't it?
Right, I think so. I think it is.
It's this summer just gone, because the previous summer he was only just making his way back from injury, remember? And he started, he played as sub in a couple of games and then obviously went to Bournemouth before the end of the transfer window. So I think it was while he was recovering from the broken leg he got at Bournemouth, he was in the gym and Arsene Wenger said, look, if a club comes in for you, you can go, which is essentially a manager saying, I don't need you, I don't want you anymore. If you're here, you might be handy, but basically I'm not counting on you.
I mean, to be honest, I was in that boat myself. Last summer I was convinced Jack Wilshere would leave Arsenal, and I think I would have advocated selling him. I don't think he'd had the best season at Bournemouth, and I think another major injury at the end of that, albeit an impact one, to me kind of was sort of the final nail in the coffin of his Arsenal career. I was surprised that he stuck around. And it shows, I guess, one of the characteristics of the last few years of Arsene Wenger's reign has been the muddled thinking on squad building. And this seems to be another example where in the summer, Jack Wilshere was told, feel free to go, you know, find yourself a club. And now he's starting regularly for us in the most important competition that we play, the Europa League. So that's, I mean, I guess some measure of credit is due to Jack. He stuck around. He fought for his place. Unlike the previous season when he went out on loan, when he got his chance around Christmas time, he really took it with some strong performances back then. He's shown that he does have a role to play. I think the problem now is that the role he envisages and the role the club view for him they're distinct, aren't they? They're different.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the club want to give him a deal on their terms and their terms alone. But I, you know, you wonder if what is the thinking behind giving him a new deal? If you were prepared to let him go last summer, what is the idea now? Why has he done enough this season, do you think, to prove to Arsene Wenger that he still merits a place? I mean, personally, I think keeping him as a squad player is no bad thing. I don't have a problem with Jack Wilshere staying as a squad player, but I don't and haven't really seen enough from him this season to suggest that he is a player who should be starting regular games for us. I certainly don't understand the idea that, you know, we should make him captain unless we want to continue the tradition of making somebody captain who doesn't play as regularly. But, you know, if you're prepared to let him go, it also means you're prepared to fill his space or fill the gap in the squad with somebody you consider better. Isn't that the idea? If you're going to let someone go, you either replenish from within, in the hope that the player that comes in can achieve their potential and perhaps be better and contribute more, or you're going to go into the transfer market and bring in a player who you feel can do more for the club and for the team. So it's a strange, strange situation, isn't it?
Yeah, I think I'm with you in that. I'd like to see Jack stay as a squad player, but I doubt he's willing to accept what the club deem squad player wages, because in his mind, he's an influential figure at the club. He's been there a long time. He's an England international. So with the new deals for Ozil, Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan, he probably looks at those salaries and thinks, I deserve a hefty pay rise. And the club, I actually do concur with the club that it's not really appropriate to do that. I think that for the wages that Jack would want, I think we could probably get a more consistent, more useful player for our dysfunctional midfield.
But of course, we have to pay a transfer fee to get that player. And if money is relatively tight for transfers this summer, or if we need to sell in order to buy to a large extent, maybe that's a way of saving some money there. So I don't know. It feels to me like the relationship between Wenger and Wilshere is not what it was. I mean, I don't mean to say they're unfriendly, but, you know, if a manager is prepared to let a player go, it means he's made up his mind on him. And anything else is just kind of fudging the issue as long as you keep playing him. So we'll have to wait and see. But, I don't at this point envisage an agreement. Do you?
No. I mean, a lot could change with the managerial situation and maybe that would influence things, but it just seems like an impasse. It seems like they want different things ultimately. They're too far apart. And I think Jack will go. I mean, my guy, if you said to me, make a call on it, I think he will go, and I think he might go abroad.
Do you think so?
We'll see.
You think he'll
go? I've just got a hunch.
Right.
Do you think he would stay in this country?
I think so, because probably the money that he'll get from another Premier League club will be better than he get abroad, which I think is a significant factor for most English players. It's why it surely can't be that there aren't clubs abroad that are interested in players from England. It's because the wages in foreign leagues don't compete with the wages in the Premier League because of the money that's on offer because of Sky and BT and all the broadcast rights and everything else. So, you know, he could go to somewhere like Everton, I guess. Sam Allardyce is talking about how much he admires Jack Wilshere. There could be like a little Arsenal enclave, Theo Walcott, Jack Wilshere, who knows who else between now and the summer. We'll have to wait and see. Aaron Ramsey, he could go to Everton too. We're going to sell Aaron Ramsey for about £5 million. That's what I think. He's going to go to Everton as well.
I mean, they could do with another number 10, I suppose, to add to, you know, Wayne Rooney, Gylfi Sigurdsson, Davy Klaassen, basically all the number 10s they brought in the summer. They could probably do with another one now.
I
said I thought he'd go abroad, and now thinking about it for about 30 seconds, Jack Wilshere, the man who turned down AC Milan and company in favour of going to Bournemouth. So maybe not. Maybe I was wrong about that.
Yeah, well, on that, before we go into part two and the questions, there's one here from Ken who's at Crowhaven or Croven. I don't know. And he says, "Hey, James, could you please stop changing your mind so often? Thanks."
So, yeah, yeah. I'll try.
Yeah.
It's confusing in here, guys. It's confusing in here. You know, you're speaking fast, you say things, you regret them seconds later, you feel compelled to tell people. It's a roller coaster.
It sure is. It sure is. And anyway, you know, any person foolish enough to change their opinion based on facts and evidence, what kind of a person is that anyway?
I know. Yeah, they're an absolute idiot. There's no place for them in the modern world.
No, exactly. All right, we're going to take a break. We're coming back with questions and more in part two right after this.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer the questions you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArsblog. But before we get into that, we have got exciting news, James. Exciting FIFA-related news.
Oh, yes, we do indeed. We're finally going to play FIFA against each other for your delectation.
Yes, we're going to do it tomorrow night, Tuesday night at 9 p.m. You know, UK Ireland time. So whatever that translates to into your particular time zone. I think I haven't quite figured it out yet. You know, in much the same way as we do the podcast, we just kind of make it up as you go along. But I think it's going to stream on YouTube. I think I can do that from within the PlayStation. What's it? I did practice before, I think, and got something to work. But we'll give the details online, on Twitter, on a post or on the blog or something like that. I'll give all the details. And you can watch us play FIFA terribly against each other. I have to warn you, James, I'm a fouling bastard.
I thought you might be. I mean, I'm going to end up with a lot of injured players, aren't I?
I'm going to end up with a lot of cards. I'm very, very fond of the off-the-ball foul, or certainly the follow-through, right, where the guy plays the pass and you just cream him up in the air. So depending on the leniency of the referee, there could be some cards in this particular one. So what are we going to do? We're going to play Arsenal versus Arsenal. Your best Arsenal team against my best Arsenal team. I think that's probably the safest way, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's what we need to do. Yeah, and I think, you know, someone suggested a draft system on Twitter, but I think we both get free reign. We pick our Arsenal team, and you know, whoever wins is the best.
The best at FIFA in the world ever. I think that's the crown, yeah, the prize that's up for grabs. And yeah, well, it should be entertaining, at least for the people watching. You're not going to see a great range of FIFA skills and wonder goals and tricks and flicks and all that kind of stuff. Normally, if I try and do the tricks, and you know, you waggle the stick and hold the thing to do the tricks, it just, the guy often falls over. It's much like real life.
Are you using Danny Welbeck at that time? I've got the game here and it's still in the cellophane, so it's going to be interesting. I mean, obviously I have played a FIFA game before, but I have not played this iteration, which shows how long I haven't played FIFA for. So, I mean, you should beat me by all reasoning. But, you know, it's a cup game. It's a one-off. Anything could happen.
Are we just going to play the one game, or are we going to do best of three, or what should we do? Like
I think by the third game, I'll have worked out like what buttons what. So maybe best of three, I think, might be the best option.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what teams we pick and who will triumph in this Arseblog versus Gunnarblog FIFA extravaganza.
Yeah, looking forward to it. So yeah, tune in tomorrow night. And it's live.
It's live. Okay, here's a question. Getting on with the questions. This is a question from... Why didn't I get it up before I started talking about questions?
You seem so certain that you had it as well. You were straight onto it. I was really impressed. And now we've got this awkward lull. Has it appeared yet?
Yeah, I've got it. It's from Matt Sanasi, who's at Matt Sanasi. I think that's how you pronounce it. And he says, if we were to try and play both Aubameyang and Lacazette in the same team, how would the rest of the team line up?
Just nine defenders and then those two. See how we get on. It's an interesting question, because I think that we kind of have to play Lacazette. I mean, we've got the Moscow game is the second game after we get back, but I don't know if you can throw him straight into that. I think he's got to get some minutes, hasn't he, against on Sunday before he plays against Moscow, whether that's from the start or from bench. I think if you played them both together, I mean, could you just keep the shape as it is and put one of them out wide on the left-hand side?
Maybe. I mean, I think the idea is to play two strikers. I think this is what the question is if we're going to play both of them, can we play the two of them as strikers, and what sort of formation we might use if we do that? I mean, could you play a sort of 4-3-1-2 type thing with Mesut Ozil in behind the two strikers?
I guess what you would have is like a sort of diamond midfield. So you've got your two strikers up top, Mesut Ozil behind that. And then I don't know, what would you have? Maybe Granit Xhaka at the base of the diamond, and Aaron Ramsey to one side, and Jack Wilshere to the other. Maybe that might be your midfield.
Yeah, it might be. It certainly seems like the kind of midfield Arsene Wenger would pick in those circumstances. Mm. But I can't see him changing the formation to play two strikers. I'd like to see it in a way, or even just something even vaguely approaching a 4-4-2. I don't know if you can do that anymore, but I don't see him playing two strikers I think he's too wedded to the system that he has in terms of what he wants from his front players anyway.
You could kind of pull off a 4-4-2. I mean, you could put Mesut Ozil on one flank and Henrik Mkhitaryan on another. I mean, I know they're not exactly conventional wingers, but then nor were Robert Pires or Freddie Ljungberg. Perhaps the issue is that Arsene Wenger doesn't have a central midfield pairing that he necessarily trusts to be solid enough in a 4-4-2. I suppose Ramsey and Xhaka would be the obvious choice, but we don't know how they would fare in that system. Do you think there's any chance Lacazette will start alongside Aubameyang against Stoke?
No, I can't see it.
You think he'll be on the bench?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to play Mkhitaryan, isn't he? And he's going to play Mesut Ozil and be with Aubameyang. Maybe, I don't know. But I can't see Lacazette coming into the team alongside Aubameyang. Maybe you could play him, as you said, as part of the front three, but not as like as part of a pair.
It's been this ever such a long time since we saw two strikers up front. I think it was, was it 2007, 2008? Or no, maybe 2006, 2007. It was around the time Eduardo was at the club. We used a few combinations. We had like Eduardo and Adebayor and Adebayor and Van Persie. I think that's the last time we saw a proper strike pairing in action at Arsenal.
Bentner and Adebayor, living the dream.
Oh, trying to kill each other on the pitch.
To be fair to Bentner...
Well, let's have another question.
To be fair to Bentner, he was ahead of the curve there, wasn't he?
Yeah, he did. He smelt a rat with Adebayor before many of us did.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair to Adebayor, he probably had a point on Bentner as well. They saw something in each other. It takes one to know one.
Fair enough. All right, your question.
Okay, this is a question. It's not an Arsenal related. It's from Mark Berland, who's M. Berland on Twitter. And Mark asks, does the World Cup this summer interest you?
Yes. Yeah, because it's a World Cup and I just have grown up with World Cups and, you know, it being a feast of football during the summer, you know, there's football on all the time. That's cool. It's just a cool thing. Maybe nowadays it's not quite as cool because there's so much saturation of football. I mean, the great thing about the World Cup was the ones that really stick in your mind, certainly the ones that stick in my mind, 82, 86, Italia 90. The great thing about those was there was so little football on the TV that this was like... It was like being a starving man and just being served up a sumptuous meal, you know, three or four times a day. And I think that had an impact on how you viewed those particular World Cups. And now it's like, oh, is there no end to football? Is there no game that won't be televised at some point somewhere? So I think it has in some ways lost a little bit of the sheen that it had. But yeah, I'm interested in it to see how it'll go. I'm kind of interested in seeing what happens in general around the World Cup and around fans and all that kind of stuff. I'm not hugely wedded to any particular team. Obviously, Ireland aren't there. Normally, my focus is on the team which has the most Arsenal players in it. So it'll be about watching, you know, maybe Germany or France to an extent. France was always one. Germany, Mesut Ozil, England, if Jack gets in there. But yeah, I'm interested, but like, I'm not going to lie and say I'm like hugely excited by it or I can't wait for it. It'll just be there. It'll be on. It'll be summertime. It'll be warm. You can have a beer and watch the football and that will be that.
My favorite World Cup memory. I mean, I actually went to the last two World Cups. I was in South Africa and I was in
Brazil.
That's
right. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not going to this one, and I'm probably not going to Qatar either. So, yeah, it'll be a bit of a different experience for me this time watching it on the telly. But my favourite memory of the World Cup probably is watching it on the telly. I mean, I had a great time watching the 2002 World Cup in Japan and Korea because at the time I was doing my GCSEs. I was 16 then. I had exams every day, and I was off school when you've got exams. It was off school revising, and the games were all at like. They started at like 5 or 6 in the morning, didn't they? Because of the time difference.
Yeah.
And I used to wake up and watch the games and then go off and do an exam. I mean, I didn't enjoy the exam bit. It's a miracle I passed any, to be honest, given how much football I was watching. But that was a great World Cup. Junichi Emoto was really good. I thought, oh, maybe he is a player after all, and then he never did anything at all.
Yeah.
But I am looking forward to it. Who will be the most Arsenal-y international team? Is it Germany with Mustafi and Ozil?
Yeah, that's if Mustafi gets in. He wasn't in the squad for the games over the international break. France, you would have said France because we would have had Giroud and Koscielny and Lacazette. So Koscielny, Lacazette would be our two French. Wilshire for England. Egypt, with Mohamed Elneny, he's going to Russia, as we know.
He is going to Russia, unlike Sam.
Unlike Sam.
Colombia, I guess.
Yeah, David Ospina. But apart from that, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's not like there's a real big Arsenal contingent at any one country, is there? So,
unless we're going to buy a load of, you know, Germans or something this summer, that would be give us something to cheer about.
Yeah.
But no, I love the World Cup. I mean, you know, it's yeah, it's definitely preferable to watching the preseason friendlies that I would probably otherwise be watching. So I'll take the World Cup every time.
All right. Here's a question from KB, who's at KB underscore is underscore on. And he says, what's your view on how to get the most out of our promising young players? Loan them out sooner? Risk it by playing them some more? So often, early promise just seems to fall away.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I've been thinking about recently because of this Rhys Nelson situation where you've got a young player of enormous potential struggling for playing time, really, and it seems to be influencing it, potentially his decision about signing a new contract and his future. I do wonder if maybe sometimes abroad manage these situations a bit better. And I hope maybe Rousseau, he might be able to bring in some of that expertise from Barcelona. Of course, it's different for them because they have the B team, right? They have a team playing competitive football in the second tier. But they also do some quite canny transfer business. I think they make very good use of the loan market, and they also they operate the buyback system as well. If you look at someone like Alvaro Morata, for example, at Real Madrid, he was loaned out, bought back, and then sold on at a great profit, but was a very handy first team player at his time at the Bernabeu. Similarly, you know, someone like, I mean, Dele Lefebvre is not maybe not the best example, but he's someone who Barcelona have kept hold of while developing him at other clubs. And I do wonder if there's room. It's not really in the culture of English football, is it, to let a guy go for a year or 2 years and then buy him back or send him on an extended loan. But I do think that might be the future because I just think the under-23s league is not significantly competitive for these players to develop as they need to.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And there's a huge difference between playing, being the best guy at that level and then playing first-team football somewhere. So, yeah, I think perhaps loan spells at an earlier age might be a thing. But, of course, at every level of football, there is a pressure on managers to get results. So we can say here, we can sit here and say, yeah, let's just loan him out to a lower division club and let's let him develop there and play regularly there. But the manager of that club, you know, has either got to get promotion or avoid relegation or whatever. And the risk of playing a young player is the same for him as it is, you know, for Arsene Wenger to an extent, that if they're going to learn on the job, just because they're learning at a slightly lower level doesn't mean the impact of their mistakes or their performances is markedly different on the team in, you know, put in that particular context. So it is difficult to say, we'll loan you this player, but we want you to play him. You can't insist that a player that you loan somewhere is played. You know, that can't be part of the deal. It's up to the manager to decide what team he picks. It's also up to the player to give the manager a decision, right? Just because you've come from Arsenal doesn't mean that you've got a God-given right to play at Colchester, for example. You know, you have to prove...
Or
you have to
Birmingham. Let's use the example of Cohen Bramall. A young Arsenal player was involved in pre-season at Arsenal, playing with the first team, you know, with mixed results, but was part of the group anyway, along with the likes of Willock and Nelson, was loaned to Birmingham City in the Championship, like a fantastic opportunity for him. And all season long, he has struggled for game time. In fact, he spent a long period not even being selected for the match day squad. And that's probably, presumably, I mean, there's a lot of stories about what's gone on with Bramall at Birmingham, but one big factor is that they've been embroiled in a relegation battle. And this is a guy with very little experience of league football. So he might not necessarily be the guy you'd want to rely on in that situation. Yeah. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not, it doesn't always pan out like you'd expect. Similarly, there are other Arsenal players who are flourishing on loan. I mean, if you read George Bird's updates on Arsblog and on his own Twitter account, it sounds like Kelechi Nwankwo is doing very well over in Holland. So, yeah. And looking like a player who might come back to Arsenal and make an impact. So I don't know. It's a really, really tricky thing, but I generally am in favour of sending people out on loan. The interesting thing about that is that Arsene Wenger isn't always, you know, when he's got a young player he really prizes, his tendency is often to keep them at Colney, to keep them at close hand. Mm. And I think Nelson, for example, falls into that category, someone who he wants to oversee his development directly. But I don't know, how do you assess this season for the young players who came into the group at the start? I'm talking about Nelson and Ketia, Willock. Do you think it's been a positive campaign for them?
I think so, yeah. I mean, obviously Maitland-Niles has got a lot of first-team football as well. You know, he's the one who's made the biggest breakthrough this season. Eddie Nketiah is somebody who people have a lot of high hopes for. Joe Willock, Reece Nelson, perhaps a little less so because of the games they've been involved in, a lot of the Europa League games, Carabao Cup games, as performances were not particularly great, were they? You know, the couple of the away games in Europe and certainly, you know, a couple of the Carabao Cup games, they were very tight, you know, wins, 1-0s, and you think about the Norwich game, it was a terrible, terrible game, which we were about to lose until Nketiah came on and scored a couple of goals. So it's hard to judge from that point of view. I suppose the thing you would say from a positive aspect for them is that they've had playing time and they've played in European football. They've gone away to perhaps not the most intimidating grounds, but it is good development for them to play first team football and to play European football. You know, it's been good for them, I think. It's hard to properly assess where they are in the pecking order or whether they're ready to make the breakthroughs or anything else. But I think as well, there is a... These days, it's more difficult than ever for a young player to not make the breakthrough, I guess, but to convince people that they're going to be a good player or somebody who can have a first-team career at Arsenal. You know, if you think back to when Tony Adams was making his way into football and he was unfairly categorized as a donkey because he made some mistakes as a young defender, as young defenders do. Arsene Wenger talked about it the other week where he said, you know, if I play a young defender, I know it's going to cost me points. That's the conundrum that managers have to deal with, right? But the difference is, back in those days, you could make a mistake and people would talk about it, but that it didn't exist beyond that. The way that things do now, that if a young defender makes...
It didn't become a gif.
Yeah, it didn't become a gif or a meme or, you know, it just... Everything reverberates now and everything hangs on a player, on a young player, on even established players. Everything that they do now exists forever and ever and ever and ever. And that's the criteria by which they're judged. And often there's this... what's the word... People are seeking perfection at all times from all players. And the minute you make any kind of a mistake, someone's going to call you a fraud or this or that, you know. And I'm not sure it's a healthy situation for players to develop in. And I wonder if it does sometimes have an impact on the careers and the fortunes of young players, that the mistakes or the things that you need to learn from in football, which pretty much every player has to do, they've got to get things wrong in order to learn from them and develop. They're not really led away with it anymore. And I think there's probably something in that or something somebody could look at in a more in-depth way rather than just this off the top of my head thought. But I do feel like it's got to have some kind of an effect, even in the way that they play. Perhaps they just, it makes them play in a more safety first way. That they don't take risks. Therefore, if you don't take risks, you don't make mistakes. But are you going to achieve your potential as a player? if you're an attacking player, for example, someone like Reece Nelson, he's an attacking, exciting player who dribbles, who's creative. Can he or would a player like him develop in the same way if he takes a safety-first approach because he doesn't want to become a meme?
No, very good point. I mean, it is a particularly punishing environment, isn't it? And the scrutiny is greater than ever. I suppose that's another argument, though, maybe in favour of the loan system. Let them make those mistakes maybe somewhere else where the scrutiny isn't quite so intense.
Mm.
Speaking of the development of young players, we have this question from Andy Coates, who's at Andy Coates 10. And Andy said, why is it, do you think, that Chambers seems to be ahead of Holding in the pecking order? I suppose Andy's asking what it is specifically about Chambers that makes Arsene favour him over Holding at the moment. Any ideas?
Maybe just he's a little bit more experienced, perhaps. Mm. I think that's probably it. I don't really know beyond that.
He's got that much more game time, hasn't he, at the top level?
Yeah, he had a good season at Middlesbrough. He played quite well for them. Maybe he's just a little more, feels like a more reliable option for Arsene Wenger than Rob Holding. I think Rob Holding is a player who, I think we spoke about a couple of weeks ago when we talk about players taking risks. He's a player who likes to take a bit of a risk sometimes with the ball when he's using the ball, and likes to be a bit more adventurous in his passing. And perhaps Arsene Wenger feels like, as a team, we've been a bit, we've been punished quite a bit, haven't we, when we've lost the ball or perhaps given the ball away in our own half. We've been rightly punished a few times this season. So maybe that's something he's working on with Rob Holding. There was an interesting article on Arseblog News, Rob Holding talking about the influence he has with the training he's doing with Jens Lehmann, how Jens is a good character on the training ground. And also, actually, if you haven't read it, there's a very good piece which appeared in the Romanian press first, and it was translated for us by a reader, Lucian. And it's an interview with Vlad Dragomir, who's got a tremendous name, but he's a Romanian youth international. And he talks about life at Arsenal and about the education that they get, the coaching that they get, the ability, for example, they can go to a coach and say, I want to watch Mesut Ozil, and they'll bring up tapes and let him watch what Ozil does, and he tries to learn from that. So it sounds really in depth the way that they're taught at that level, the way that they're coached and the way that they're educated. And I think perhaps the barrier, the problem comes when they're asked to make the step up to first team level. But do check that one out if you can find it. It's it's been a quiet week, so it's fairly high up on the site. So if you visit Arseblog News, you'll see that interview. Well worth a read. Anyway, I mean, what's your take on the Holding Chambers thing?
I don't know, really. I mean, I really like Rob Holding as a player. And you spoke about that risk-taking element. I think that he is a bit more adventurous on the ball than Chambers. Maybe that comes with a certain element of risk. And, you know, at this stage of the season, with so much on the line in the Europa League, maybe Arsene feels he has to be a bit risk-averse. I think it is experience, ultimately. But I think Holding's got the bigger upside. I think if I was looking at the two players and saying which one am I really optimistic could be a part of this defence moving forward, I think Chambers, for me, he doesn't look like he's ever going to be more than a squad player at Arsenal, but I think Holding has it in him to be more than that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next season, because one thing is certain is that young defenders don't develop if they don't play. And if Chambers has got the nod because of his experience, it's because he went out to Middlesbrough and had all that playing time. If Holding is going to improve, he needs to play, be that at Arsenal or elsewhere. I think that he does need to make that step in order to kick on. I was encouraged by what he said about Jens Lehmann as well, because, you know, we do have questions quite often about what does Jens Lehmann do? Is he actually doing anything? And it was sort of nice to see the Jens that we know and love is very much present on the training ground.
Yeah, absolutely. They have some heated discussions, I think is what he said, but, you know, there's nothing personal. it was funny because when I was at Members' Day, I watched Jens Lehmann and Rob Holding working together. He was getting Holding to spray passes from one side of the pitch to the other, and was very encouraging when he was getting it right. But, you know, you could see him demanding more as he was doing it. But there you go. I have a question here. I think, hang on. No, I don't. Hang on. This has been a disaster of a recording. It really has. We're just not on it today. I do have a question. It comes from Graham J. Hawk, at Graham J. Hawk, and he said, after seeing the Twitter conversation with Cesc on the weekend, where Cesc was answering questions, and he said the favourite goal he scored was the one just after we scored against Tottenham, TV barely caught it because we were still celebrating, which was a marvellous occasion. I was there for that and I enjoyed it a great deal. He said, would you like to see him come back to Arsenal to finish his career? I, for one, would love to see him play for Arsenal again. We could do with a central midfielder with his ability. What do you say? Or what say you, he says.
What say me? I say that was then... and there was an opportunity for Cesc to come back when he left Barcelona. I think we've kind of missed the boat on that one now. And I it's difficult to see him, as much as I love him, as the solution to our midfield problems now. I think with a heavy heart, I have to say that the ship has sailed. But it does fill me with sadness. What about you?
Yeah, no, it's too late now. It's too late now. I think we need something different in central midfield. And certainly he's at a point in his career where... you know, he's not getting any younger or faster. And I think, yeah, that ship has sailed. I would have taken him back, of course, when he was leaving Barcelona, but it wasn't to be. But on that, here's another little question on Cesc from Daniel Houston, who's at GunnarDan01. And he says, who's been better for us at the peak of their powers, not taking into account their teammates, Cesc Fabregas or Mesut Ozil?
Personally, I think Cesc Fabregas, actually. I think that in terms of his productivity with goals and assists, the combined numbers, he was very, very good. I think that he, in a way that Ozil doesn't quite do, I think he galvanised the team with his performances. I think he was a very young captain, but he was a leader by example. And I think that it's a crying shame that he wasn't surrounded by... better players, and that we didn't have the financial power then really to bring other players of Cesc caliber. So I would probably go for Cesc of those two. What about you?
Yeah, I don't think you can't take into account the teammates. I don't think you can properly examine the two of them without taking into account the quality of the players that they had around them. And certainly Fabregas had some good players. There's no question that Arsenal did have some good players at that time. But, you know, I do wonder when you look at what he's done with some of the players that he has had to play with in central midfield in particular, what more we might have achieved if he'd had better players around him. So, you know, Ozil has come in and we've won three trophies during that time, three FA Cups. Got to look at those successes, I think, and say that Ozil has made a fantastic contribution. But I think in terms of what they did for the overall team, I think Fabregas slightly edges it for me just in terms of, you know, what he gave and what he contributed to the team. Slightly. I would love to have seen both of them play together, by the way.
Yeah, and funnily enough, that's the precise reason Arsene Wenger didn't bring Cesc Fabregas back, because he felt he had Mesut Ozil and he didn't have room for both. I just think maybe I'm being a little bit influenced by those kind of dreaded intangibles, but I think of occasions where it really felt like Cesc dragged us through the game. I think there was one match against Aston Villa in particular, that North London derby you referred to before. There were a lot of games when, you know, he seemed to really propel the team forward, and I think that just gives him the edge for me.
All right, you got another question?
I probably do. I do, yeah, but it's obviously a ridiculous one. So this is from Frederick Anderson, and Frederick asks, you either have to only eat soup with a fork for the rest of your life, or steak with a spoon for the rest of your life? It's actually not a question, it's an ultimatum.
Right, steak with a spoon. Easy. You can't eat soup with a fork, or it would take you ages. But steak with a spoon, assuming the steak was tender enough, perfectly doable.
Do you think you could eat a steak with a spoon comfortably?
Not comfortably, but like you could make it work much more easily than you could make soup with a fork work. You know?
Also, I'm not really into soup. Do you like soup?
Yeah.
I'm not convinced by soup as an entity.
What do you mean you're not convinced by soup? What does it need to convince you of?
I just don't really buy into soup. Sorry, guys.
I'm a fan of soup, yeah. Yeah,
whenever I have soup, I feel like it's not really a meal. That's kind of how I feel about soup.
That's it's often a starter, isn't it? You know, soup.
Yeah, I'm on board with it as a starter. I can, you know, you can just about convince me to have it as a starter. But when someone's like, when I'm like, what are we having for dinner? And it's like, oh, what about soup? I'm like, that's not a thing. That's my opinion.
Yeah, but you need the bread to go with the soup. What's your favorite soup? If you were put on the line and you had to pick, what is your favorite soup?
My favorite soup is like clear chicken soup. I don't like a creamy chicken soup. I find that weird, but like a chickeny broth, like a Jewish chicken soup. You know what I mean? Like nice, like sort of gravy and basically a bowl of gravy is what I want.
Fair enough.
What about you?
Unadventurous. I'm very partial to a French onion soup.
Very nice.
I like that. I very much enjoy a leek and potato soup. That's good. Tomato's a good soup. I like that.
Tomato, you can't go wrong, can you?
No.
You can't go wrong.
Not really.
Do you like croutons in your soup?
Not especially, because they get soggy. They just become soggy, so I'd just rather have bread.
I'm with you, yeah. It's all about the bread. For me, soup is basically an excuse to have bread.
Yeah, yeah. It's good for dunking bread in. But I like it of itself anyway. I think, you know, there's a lot of variety out there. You can make a lot of good soups, nice spicy soups, butternut squash and chili.
Butternut squash, a spicy one. That is a good soup. That is a good soup. I admit that much.
Right. See, you're more of a fan of soup than you're letting on. I think
in a way, I'm changing my mind again, aren't I?
You've changed your mind. You've absolutely changed your mind on soup. Just 30 seconds after talking.
I'm just a very malleable person. I just want to please people, I suspect, is what's the psychology of it deep down.
Yeah, you could be convinced to do anything if you want that person to like you. Is that what you're saying?
Basically, if I want that person to like me, I'll eat whatever soup they present me with. Yeah.
Caterpillar. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain caterpillar soup.
Yeah. caterpillar soup. I couldn't eat a bug. That's another thing I would really struggle with.
No.
You know, like when they go on those television shows in the jungle and they have to like eat a larvae or something.
Yeah. Who's the guy that's always doing that? The one that drinks his own piss and stuff?
Robbie Savage. No.
The guy.
What's his name? Bear Grylls.
Yeah. He's always doing that kind of shit, isn't he? Like, he'll pick up a scorpion from under a rock and go, actually, the head of the scorpion is full of nutrition, and he'll eat that and make a terrible face and then wash it down with a goblet of his own urine. But, I wouldn't be into that. I guess if you're hungry enough, you'll eat anything, but I think you should just put yourself in a position where you're not reliant on having to eat insects of any kind.
I was just going to say, if I ever end up on a desert island or something, I think we all know that I would sort of die so quickly that it would never really get to the insect eating stage, you know?
I saw a thing recently where they're making flour out of insects and people are making insect bread. I'm pretty sure that's the thing. Maybe I was dreaming it.
Well, you're getting into bread making. Yeah. I mean, is that something you would do?
No, absolutely not. I'd use normal flour, I guess. Yeah, actually, if you Google flour insects, it's all about how you get insects in your flour. But I'm almost certain I saw they sort of dry out these small little cricket things and then they pulverize them and make a flour out of them and you can make bread and shit. The world is strange, though, nowadays, isn't it? It is. No.
Imagine if someone presented me with a bowl of soup and then they were like, but don't worry, here's some delicious bread. But then the bread was all made of insects. It would be a nightmare.
Yeah, unless you wanted that person to like you and you would just eat the bread.
Oh, listen, if I wanted their good opinion, I would eat the insects live. I was going to say, apparently that's the answer, isn't it, to the world's hunger problems, is that we need to eat more insects.
Right.
Yeah. There's loads of them and we're not eating them. We're letting them get away scot-free.
Millions of the little fuckers everywhere.
Mm. Well, I'm glad we solved the soup problem. I agree with you. I'd eat the steak with a spoon, please. Yeah,
absolutely. All right. Well, look, we're going to leave it there. Join us tomorrow evening if you want to see two terrible FIFA 18 players have at it online live for your enjoyment. We'll post the links to that on the Twitters at Gunnerblog and at Arseblog, and also probably on the blog itself. So check that out. Thanks for being here as ever. Remember, if you feel like giving us a rating or a review on iTunes, that would be very welcome. Just don't take this particular episode as the one that you should be rating. Maybe I shouldn't ask today. That would be a bad idea.
It's not our fault that there's no football. Maybe rate the next one after the Stoke game. The crushing victory over Stoke. That promises to be an absolute corker of an episode.
Exactly. Rate one of the good ones, not this one. We'll catch you on the next one. There will be an Arsecast on Friday as we look ahead to Stoke and the return, thankfully, of some football. So until then, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.